Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love. Brought to you by Captain Geek and the Dark Nerd. I'm your Captain Will.
And I'm your nerd, Jess.
Today, we are talking The Mandalorian, specifically Episode 2 of Season 2, Chapter 10, The Passenger. So, I will just start right off by saying spoilers, many spoilers, spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, so spoiler alert. We're going to go right into spoilers on this. So, The Passenger. What do we think of The Passenger? Let's just do some general sort of impressions really quick. You know, feel free to spoil, but like general impressions of this episode. Like, what did you think? Did you enjoy it? Did it suck? Was it, as some people are saying, was it like a boring filler episode for you? What was it?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier about the filler episode, and I'm trying to understand exactly how that could be. I mean, honestly, it does set up a story because he's still got to be transporting these eggs to hunt down more Mandalorians. Because, as we know, the passenger is a person that I don't know what the race is. I hadn't looked it up. But it's basically a frog woman with a backpack full of eggs that Mando is escorting to find her husband so her eggs can be fertilized because they are the last of her line. And she doesn't want her line to die out. So Mando's doing this because he was promised the reward of finding other Mandalorians. And do we know exactly what his goal is to like form a team?
He just wants to find more Mandalorians so that they, well, a couple of reasons. I mean, A, he wants to have a community again, basically, but B, and probably more importantly, you know, he wants their help in tracking down these Jedi sorcerers who might know where to find Baby Yoda's species. And he knows, you know, from his talks with the armorer played by Emily Swallow, that, you know, the Jedi were ancient enemies of the Mandalorians. And so they must, you know, somebody somewhere must know something about them. I think that's really what it boils down to.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, I think obviously they could say it's a filler episode because it's kind of like a little separate, you know, storyline. But I think what it is, it's setting up, you know, exactly what the story is going to become. So I think it's interesting.
I think it's setting up a lot of stuff. And I think, frankly, that coming out of that last episode, that, you know, the first episode of this season where he meets Timothy Oliphant as Cobb, the marshal, and gets the Mandalorian armor. It's like he's got to be feeling disappointed that he didn't actually find a Mandalorian, like a real Mandalorian.
Right.
I mean, yes, he can, you know, he got the armor and a nice hunk of steak.
Yeah.
By the way,
nice
hunk. Out of all of that. But it just wasn't, you know, it's got to be disappointing, you know, to do that. And then here he is, you know, he's got to transport a frog lady across the system without using hyperdrive.
Right.
So he's a little demoralized. And so I think that scene where the frog lady, you know, like patches herself through the droid to actually be able to communicate with him, she really gives him a swift kick in the ass and reminds him, in a sense, of who he is and what he stands for, and really gets him moving, because he was basically like, you know, he's like, all right, I guess I'm just going to sleep and hope that I have an idea of like how to get us out of this mess.
Yeah, that part, like I mentioned, struck me as kind of strange, because I would figure when presented with a problem, Mando would just, you know, get right on it and jump right into solving it. But in this episode, he's kind of a sleepy boy. And little baby Yoda, little baby bastard, doesn't really, you know, he's like a toddler with his snacks.
He's totally a toddler, yeah.
Yeah, as far as what I thought of the episode itself, I thought it was well-paced. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, it starts off exactly where the episode one left off. He's on his speeder, gets jumped by a bunch of bounty hunters.
And
roundly deals with them.
And I said it in our commentary, I think, but like when I was, you know, first watching this episode and I see them setting this up, I'm like, okay, this is going to cause a problem for Mando and he's probably going to get kind of beat up. But I feel if I didn't want these guys to, you know, do whatever horrible things to the baby Yoda and Mando, you know, that I love, then I would feel sorry for them because they got a world of hurt coming.
Oh, yeah. Literally speeding towards them.
Yes, yes. they're about to poke the hornet's nest and they're not going to like what happens. And that's what happened.
And that was like a 2 or 3 minute scene, which ended awesomely. The guy, one of the bounty hunters, had little baby Yoda up with a knife to his throat.
It's like, whoop. And
he wanted Mando's jetpack. Silly wabbit. So Mando sends him shooting up into the sky.
That was great.
Didn't see it coming. Neither did he.
And you know, if anybody's prepared to like say, well, Mando should have stayed true to his word, I'm pretty sure that, you know, his code allows him to do that sort of thing to somebody who was just threatening to cut the throat of a young child.
Right.
Right. You don't, you deal with those people appropriately.
Yeah. And we go from that scene to where he gets back with, I can't remember the character's name, but the Amy Sedaris character. And she sets him up with the,
Dr. Mandible,
who has information on, you know, the passenger itself. But
I laughed. So, well, you know, it wasn't like a huge, like drawn out extend laughter, but I thought it was so funny when that scene first opens and her first line looking at Dr. Mandible is like, she's like, oh, I guess somebody is going home empty handed. My first thought was, oh, she's like his wingman and he's trying to get a date, which I found to be hilarious. But upon further thought, I think she was talking about their card game.
Right.
But I did find it funny that for a second that she would be like Dr. Mandible's wing and this insectoid.
So, yeah, how could you hook that up with anybody?
I don't know. Anyway,
who's that tall ant over there?
But I do think that to your point before, that scene where, you know, she basically gives him a swift kick in the ass. I think that's really important. And that probably is like, you know, maybe that's a scene that will even pay off more later.
Yeah.
Just thinking about it. But the other thing, or I'm sorry, were you continuing with a point?
Oh, yeah. I was just saying it's like, you know, after that, they start their journey. And like I said, it's real well paced because it's kind of an action packed episode. You got, you know, not really a dog fight, but you got a high speed chase. You have some horror thrown in. You got some antics. It's a good blend of, you know, different emotions and different little sub stories going on within the episode. I thought it was a lot.
There was actually a lot going on in this episode, I think. And I really enjoyed the whole sequences with the X-Wings and, excuse me, and with their pilots. Like, you know, I like how we're getting a glimpse, if ever so slight a glimpse, of the New Republic. Because, like, they come and they're there to, like, enforce the, like, traffic rules or whatever with the transponder. But they're not total, you know, they're not total dicks about it.
It's not like ED-209. You have 10 seconds to go.
Right. They're actually quite friendly, even though they're firm about the fact that he's got to turn on his transponder. And then, of course, once they finally make him do it, they're like, all right, we can wait.
Yeah.
And he's like, he finally, like, flips the switch that was right in front of him the whole time. And then they're like, Bob, can I talk to you on another channel for a second? And like they talk for a couple seconds and Mando's just sitting there. And then like you see the X-Wings shift into like, you know, X formation. And it's like, it's on, you know, it's on.
He's just like, zoom, takes off.
Mm-hmm. And that was a really cool chase, like through the clouds and down to the like ice planet. I really appreciate that whenever there's some type of like either space battle or like chase or something, that they switch it up. So it's not always like the same visual thing over and over again. I think maybe I said that in the commentary too.
Yeah. And you get a lot of that because out in space, you know, you have all the different planets and stuff flying around. So there's so many options to go with it. And they really did a good job.
And the one X-Wing pilot was Dave Filoni, the Caucasian guy. So, and then of course later, you know, they come back and they basically save Mando and Baby Yoda and Frog Lady and Eggs by, you know, shooting off the rest of those big spider things, which is something else I want to talk about. But like, again, not dicks.
Right.
But at the same time, they're like, I really like how they had this recognition where they looked a little bit beyond, you know, just the letter of the law, in saying like, look, you stole this prisoner, but I guess it turns out that you put your life on the line to defend, you know, our guy who was there,
our own,
manning the station.
Yeah. And they mentioned a couple other things that he did. It's like, oh, you took out some guys on our, you know, top 10 most wanted list or whatever. So it's like, we don't like what you do some of the time, but we respect what you do, you know, the rest of the time. So we're not exactly enemies, but we are not friends. You know, they make that clear. It's like, you know, don't come calling if you want us to help you rebuild your ship, silly Wabbit.
Yeah. And by the way, the guy who played that, the one like living person that was on that prisoner transport, his name is Matt. The actor's name is Matt Lanter. And he actually did the voice for Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars animated show.
Nice.
And did a really fantastic job of it, by the way. But anyways, I wanted to bring that up. And so, you know, it turns out, like we've been saying, that like, yeah, like, okay, they're not going to like stick around all day and stop patrolling the system in favor of like helping him to weld his ship. But they do let him off the hook. And so I think that this is, you know, they're really showing us how the New Republic is different from the Empire.
Yeah.
In the sense that the people are more free thinking. They're very much more about the spirit of, you know, freedom and justice rather than just being like slavishly devoted to, you know, whatever rules or laws have been set down and forgetting the spirit of them and stuff. And so it's like cool to see that. And actually, the other moment about the X-Wing stuff that I really enjoyed was when Mando's like, may the force be with you, but he's like saying it like his heart's really not in it.
Yeah.
He just knows how to like, you know, fit in like
speak their language,
yeah, type of a thing.
And that was one thing too, just talking about it now brought up a question. It's like, yeah, they let him off the hook, but what do you think was their exact reason for hunting him down again, just to tell him they let him off the hook? Because they could have just said, we'll just leave him alone.
They probably, I guess the way that I read that is that they were originally intending to just follow, you know, regulation and, like, bring him in or whatever. But then when they saw, you know, once they got into the chase and they lost him for a little while, they had an opportunity to kind of reflect on, and maybe they even like dug deeper into his records or something,
right.
You know, and then they found out the other information. So that's kind of how I take it. Yeah. But it was really cool to see the X-Wings, because that's, you know, very classic Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And I love also there's a shot as they leave, as the X-Wings fly away and Mando's just like standing there outside the ship, where you see that sort of like red glow from their afterburners, like on him and the ship and everything. And they kind of fade away exactly the way it happens, you know, in Empire Strikes Back when Luke leaves Dagobah and, you know, the glow is of his red afterburners is there on Yoda and stuff. That was just a nice, like, visual callback for me.
Yeah.
To that. And again, I think The Mandalorian, one of the reasons it's so successful is that, in like the entire Star Wars fandom, pretty much, is that it's so good at synthesizing stuff from the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy and the animated shows, you know, in a really organic way. And another example of that are the spider things. So like, I know you haven't watched Star Wars Rebels, but there is a race of spider things that look really, 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 really similar. I mean, if they're not exactly the same species, they're definitely cousins. But in Star Wars Rebels, they're called the Krykna. That's K-R-Y-K-N-A. And they appear on a totally different planet in that show, the planet of Atolon.
Yeah, maybe they're just a separate branch of the same evolutionary.
Terrifying that those things can be multiple planets. But for those that are wondering, they appear in 5 episodes of Star Wars Rebels, Season 2, Episode 20, The Mystery of Chopper Base, Season 3, Episode 3, Season 3, Episode 14, Season 3, Episode 15, and Season 3, Episodes 21 and 22.
In case y'all are bored tonight.
Yep, that's The Mystery of Chopper Base, The Holocrons of Fate, Warhead, Trials of the Dark Saber. Does that sound familiar? In 0 Hour. So just wanted to bring that up. That's a nice integration of the Filoniverse. And this is, so this is another topic, and we can talk about, maybe let's get into, should we get into the Filoniverse connections now, or should we talk more about the spiders in the episode first? Let's talk about the spiders in the episode.
Let's talk about the spiders.
So what do you have to say about these spiders?
Well, basically, we get introduced to the spiders because I think for the second time in the episode, little baby Yoda is falling prey to the voice of not his heart or his mind, but of his little belly.
His belly.
Because we witnessed earlier in the episode with the frog lady transporting her eggs, the second little baby Yoda lays eyes on her, he's enthralled with this, you know, backpack she has, which is basically a huge cylinder full of liquid and all of her eggs floating in it. And he's just wide-eyed, not with wonder. And I don't know, it's probably 10 minutes into the episode or whatever. He sneaks over and finds it, and then he looks around. It's on the Razor Crest, and Mando and the frog lady are up front, and they're flying around, and he sees this thing and looks around, and nobody's watching. So he pops the thing open and pops one of those eggs in his mouth and slurps it in.
This is an example of how Baby Yoda really does act like a toddler.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have kids, like, you might not know this, but a toddler will pick up anything and just put it in their mouth and eat it.
Yeah. And
anything.
The episode shows, it will happen the second you enter the room. You will see it happen. It's like,
but it'll be too late for you to do anything about it.
Yeah. Very rare is the occasion where you're like, hey, I had a candy bar sitting here. Anyone see where it went? No, you will see where it went exactly when it went. It's you always perfect timing, and it happens in this episode. He walks in, just says, little baby Yoda slurps up this egg.
Well, I think the most comparable, like, human age that you could say, you know, that baby Yoda is, like, obviously he's 50 years old, but like in human terms, developmentally, he's basically a 1.5-year-old.
Yeah.
Because at 1.5, you know, they can kind of toddle around, they can kind of walk around, even though it looks a little funny, and they can kind of make like babbling sounds, and they can grab things, and they can understand a lot of the things that you say, but they, you know, they will still put everything into their mouth. I mean, you might be thinking to yourself right now, Will, Jess, you know, surely you're exaggerating. Surely there are some things that the baby wouldn't put directly into their mouth. Nope. They find somehow, if they somehow found a turd, they would put that in their mouth.
Yeah. And my children, my daughter just turned 18 a couple weeks ago, and my son turns 12 this coming December. And I'll let you know that kids have that annoying habit, not just as toddlers. It extends for years too. They will put things into their mouths that they shouldn't, many years beyond what you'd think. But anyway,
that's another story. Okay, so you were leading up to something. Yes. With Baby Yoda here.
So he likes the little eggs, and they're on this planet. They fall down. They're hiding from the X-Wings. They crash down through the ice into an underground cavern, and they're freezing. Mando's like, I'm super tired all of a sudden, so let's all take a nap and blah, blah, blah. And then Frog Lady gives him a good hard talking to. He goes out to fix the ship. And then we find out that Frog Lady has run off with her eggs. So,
as frog ladies do.
So Baby Yoda and our Mando goes off a-searching, and they find her floating completely and deliciously nude in a a bubbling, that wasn't really bubbling, but a steaming underwater hot pool, like a hot tub sort of thing.
Can I just say, deliciously is not the adjective I would have used there.
You
continue.
Sadly, we haven't seen the rest of, you know, what the Rock is cooking, if you know what I'm saying. But all right, they find her in this hot tub with all of her eggs floating around her like some sort of delicious egg drop soup. And then Baby Yoda Mando's like, no, we can't do this. So he starts scooping up the eggs, putting them back in the thing. And Baby Yoda goes to reach for one. And Mando's like, no, no. And all you see is his face and the Mando's hand on the right side of the screen pointing, no, no, that firm finger. So Baby Yoda's like, fine. And he turns around and wanders off a couple feet and sees all these weird... I mean, it's not, you knew kind of what was coming the second you looked at it. They look like the egg sacs from Alien.
Yeah. So, yeah, they did. And then once he touches one, it like it opens the way that the egg sacs from Alien open.
Well, he touches one and then like just grips into it and it opens up and you see that same mucusy sort of filling around there. I don't know if you'd want to call it a yolk.
It's like this like spider thing with like green like slime and stuff on it.
I mean, if you ever been to like a sushi restaurant or even an Italian restaurant where they have the good deep fried calamari, it almost looked like a crunchy form of a little baby calamari in there. God. But he picks it up covered in this green smush. And
just shoves it in his mouth. Oh,
crunches it, and it's so disgusting. He's still
and it's got
strings.
The little legs flailing out his lips. Oh, just sent shivers down my spine.
Yeah, and somehow that caused all these other eggs to start opening up, and out crawl these hideous, pale, white, grayish sort of spiders. I don't even know if they had eight legs or what, but they're spider-like with, like, instead of their body projecting back from
I'm just
going to
say that they're
straight
the
Krikna
up. For now.
Yeah, the Krikna.
The Krikna or the Krikna cousins.
Krikna cuz. But they're horrifying, and there's thousands, probably
Question.
More. Yes.
Question. What was more horrifying? Seeing all the spiders and, you know, that whole scene that progressed, or the fact that Baby Yoda ate a little one?
Well, I mean, honestly, the first time they were in the first time I watched the episode before we did our commentary and all that, I was watching it with my son, and we had already discussed the X-Wing guys come back and save them by killing another one of those spiders for them, and then the scene just shows the Razor Crest like broken with this huge Krikna on top of it, and I'm like, well, at least you got something to eat. You know, I mean, you look
at those things. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
You look at a crab or a rattlesnake or
after
you
that
know.
Great dragon steak. It's there's no way.
Well, nothing beats the beef, you know, but seafood. I mean, it's basically crabs and stuff. You know, it's a crustacean.
I love how they cooked that steak too, by the way, with the little robot basically doing the rotisserie, and they just had like the
little Johnny Five head on it. Johnny Five barbecue bot.
Yeah.
But so I mean, it's gross that he ate the thing, but who knows? Could be delicious.
I'm sure it was delicious for him.
I think they're protruding.
Super picky at that age. That's the other thing is like at that age, you know, at like 1.5 for a human, kids will basically, I mean, at least my kids will just eat anything you put in front of them. You know, it's not until a little bit later that they start to get picky and be like, nope, I don't like broccoli, or, you know, nope, I don't like, you know, whatever it is.
Right. And, you know, the Krikna didn't seem to show any venom or stingers or anything, just those rows upon rows of teeth in their mouth, not unlike like a lamprey. They had a lamprey face with that terrifying body. But so you wouldn't have to worry about him getting poisoned. So, yeah, just a sticky, chewy, crunchy, delicious little yum yums.
OK. All right. Moving on. Because I just can't continue to contemplate eating those things.
But it's like I mentioned during our commentary, it's like the way they showed the Krikna, as we're calling them, it was almost like I made the comment, they should have released this on Halloween, you know, closer to Halloween, because it could be their Halloween horror
episode.
It would
have been a good Halloween episode, yeah. Because
those things were terrifying, and it was a tense moment.
Well, it is the first episode after Halloween, is it not? So
It is. This is true.
Indeed. So I want to talk about Boba Fett, because, you know, this episode really did pick up, as you mentioned, exactly where the last episode left off, which does not always happen with this show.
Right.
And as we know, at the very tail end of the last episode, Boba Fett was there watching him, you know, on his speeder go through the desert. And then, you know, presumably it was shortly after that that he lost his speeder and had to go on foot the rest of the way to Mos Eisley. And there's no way that Boba Fett did not see that. And so, you know, my assumption here is that Boba Fett is tailing him and waiting for the best moment to try and sort of engage with him in some way to try and get his armor back. And again, I think I mentioned this in our last episode about Mando, but I feel like that's something they're setting up for later in the season. Whether that'll be something at the midpoint or something like towards the end of the season, I feel like that's kind of how they're setting it up. And it also is not clear to me, you know, whether they'll ultimately be, I mean, they're going to fight. They're going to come to blows, but I don't know that that means necessarily that they're not going to work together for some period of time. You just don't know.
Well, here's my prediction. Okay. And I'm just going to throw it out here. We'll see where it lands in the end. I think, like you said, they are going to fight. Boba has been without his armor, but he's still a warrior. You know, he's still a capable warrior. So I think they are going to have some fisticuffs happen.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
And I think Boba's going to get his armor back very much in the same way that Mando got Boba's armor by doing a favor for Cobb. I think Boba's going to have to earn his armor back from Mando by saving his life. You don't think?
I think the only way that Boba gets his armor back by like Mando freely giving it to him is either Mandalorian has no choice to do that or else he and the child are dead. Or,
well, he's obviously going to save the child from some unknown fate.
Yeah, but the thing is, with Boba not actually being a Mandalorian, there's no way in hell that, you know, Din Djarin is going to hand it over to him unless he either A, thinks that he is a Mandalorian, so there's some deceit there, or he has no choice to do it, you know, to save his and Baby Yoda's lives. I think those are...
And then they don the armor and fight together, like you said.
That could be it. They make a deal to work together, and he's like, hey, you got this armor that I could use that would really up our chances of coming out of this alive. And then once, you know, even if the agreement is like he gives it back, once the fight is over, you know, Boba Fett's like, bye. And he just flies away with it or something, you know.
I think by the end of this show, they're going to be best friends like Bill and Ted. And that would be excellent.
Party on, dude. anyway. but yeah, I mean, I think one of those scenarios has almost certainly got to be correct. I mean, that leaves a lot of room for other details, because I think that even though this like confrontation with Boba Fett is looming for later in the season, I really see Moff Gideon, you know, Giancarlo Esposito's, a character who has the Darksaber, as really being the big bad of this season still.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's still out there. He's still looking for them. And eventually he's going to catch up with Mando, or his people will, or something. Or actually, it might turn into a thing where... So, okay, let's talk about... Should we talk for a minute about what we think is going to happen in the next episode? Because I think this is going to... Like, sort of my projection for, like, this whole season, you know... Can't make it too specific, but basically... He's going to go to this other world, Trask, I think that it was called, delivering
the
frog
eggs.
Woman.
Yes.
Yeah. She's going to talk to her husband.
At least maybe most they'll, of them.
Yeah. And maybe they'll even use the Zero head to like translate or something. Mm-hmm. But it'll turn out that he'll give him some lead to find the Mandalorians, and he'll go looking for them. And he'll actually run into like somebody like either Bo-Katan or Sabine Wren, who are Mandalorian characters from, you know, the Star Wars Rebels. And I think actually Bo-Katan was also in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Bo-Katan was the sister of the former ruler of Mandalore before it was conquered by Darth Maul. That's a long story. You got to watch the show. And then actually Sabine Wren was the one who ended up recovering the Darksaber from Darth Maul, and she gave it to Bo-Katan to be the new leader. And then a bunch of other stuff happened on Mandalore, blah, blah, blah. Moff Gideon ended up getting the Darksaber. And so I think that those are Mandalorian characters who will be motivated to take on Moff Gideon, who's the villain we've already met in The Mandalorian, who has the Darksaber and is, you know, chase. So it might into this thing where they'll be like, all right, we'll help you. We can put you in touch with somebody, you know, we know who's like a Jedi or connected to the Jedi who might have this information, but you got to help us get the Darksaber back. I would not be surprised if that's what happens.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be because Moff Gideon, you know, they ended season one, basically, you know, taking out that, what do they call the meeting place of the Mandalorians underground?
His covert.
Their covert. Yeah. You know, it's like they cleared that one out and basically killed them all. And so I think Moff Gideon's obviously going to be hunting down the rest of them. So as he's hunting them down, him and Mando are going to cross paths. And that could be very well what happens as the passenger is delivered and these other Mandalorians are discovered.
You know, and it might even turn into a thing where he gets Boba Fett to help them. Or that might just be a totally separate situation. In fact, that the more I think about it, the more it sounds like a separate thing. But, you know, I feel like it could very well go that way. It's like he finds these Mandalorians. They're like, sure, we can put you in touch with somebody, but you got to like do all this first. And that could even take quite a few episodes.
Right. And really, I think that'll be the introduction of Ahsoka Tano.
Well, she's going to be in one episode, I think they've said. And I feel very
probably the last
confident
one.
That it will be either the very last episode or the second to the last episode, yeah. The penultimate.
Yeah, they'll be building her up for season three.
Well, because there's been rumors that like she's going to get her own spinoff show. And honestly, I would not be surprised if that happens, because whether she's the main character in that show or a supporting character, because she is a really, really popular character in Star Wars now. And, you know, especially after the way the sequel trilogy went, you know, there's a lot of people dissatisfied with the franchise that is something that can unify the fandom again. And that's really what they want, because they want to capitalize on the franchise. Right. So,
and we're still waiting for Greef Karga to show.
Well, so that's part of why I think like what might happen is the Mandalorians are like, you got to do this for us. And then he's like, okay, I got to assemble a team again. Right. And so he goes back to Nevarro and he's like, Cara Dune,
oh, yeah, Karga,
I need your help. You know what I'm saying? And so, and he'll be like, you know, we need to do this for the Baby Yoda. Plus, here, I'll pay you. You know, like, I feel like it could easily go that way. And then somewhere in there, he'll get delayed by, you know, Boba Fett. That could be an episode or two, even. Because, mm-hmm. Okay, so this was the second episode. We got 6 episodes left. Okay, so if we're saying six episodes left, at least one of those is going to be confrontation with Boba Fett. Okay, or actually, let's go more chronologically if we can. So next episode, episode 3, he's going to find some Mandalorians, right? He's going to go to that planet and find some Mandalorians,
right?
Or maybe the episode is he has to do something before he can get to where the Mandalorians are, and he finds them all the way at the end, right? So one, maybe 2 episodes doing that. There's going to be a Boba Fett episode. There's going to be an episode where he has to deal with Moff Gideon. In fact, my bet is like that, maybe even like 2 episodes. And then, you know, the final episode where he finally overcomes like the final hurdle and gets to meet up with Ahsoka with the promise of she's going to give him information about where he can find, you know, the species of the Baby Yoda.
Right.
That to me is the rest of the episodes of this season. What do you think about that prediction?
I think that sounds pretty cool. I mean, it would be cool to see all that happen, but I have no idea what they have really
planned. Well, how is the big question.
Yes, as far as the story goes, you know.
I mean, ideas are a dime a dozen, and it's really easy for me to predict certain things based on like story structure and what we know about characters that are appearing and stuff like that. Like, sure. But like how they do it, obviously, is what really makes it, you know,
yeah.
Work. And what...
Yeah. And you kind of have the upper hand on this because you're more familiar with the Rebels and the other, you know, canon cartoons.
You got to watch. All right. So wait, are you going to watch? We discussed doing a special kind of Star Wars episode this December. But however, that relies upon, you know, you watching the entire
seven seasons
of the Clone Wars.
So if I watch one a day, like I'll be on what season?
Well, each episode, like each episode's like 23 to 25 minutes. And actually the final season is a smaller number of episodes than all the other seasons.
Yeah, it's quite an undertaking.
It is. But I mean, you know, the sooner you get started.
Right. I try and be a busy man when I'm not laying around recording podcast episodes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you say. But so anyways. Anyways, so I think that's really how the rest of this season could go, very generally speaking, obviously.
Yeah.
But and I know that the list of episode titles was leaked out there somewhere, but I actually have not looked at it on purpose.
Yeah, I don't care.
So I'm not going to bring that into it.
The death of Baby Yoda.
But, you know, this is also where we start to be more firmly entrenched in what people are calling the Filoniverse, because, you know, right. Dave Filoni has been very heavily involved in the whole Star Wars franchise ever since the start of the Clone Wars, which was like 2008. So it's been like 12 years or so, you know, since that.
I can do that in a month and a half.
but think about it. Like, we're getting Boba Fett back, and he is from the original trilogy, but we got a lot of Boba Fett actually in the Clone Wars. I say a lot, but I mean maybe like 3-4 episodes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, still, that's, you know, that's probably like a good like maybe hour to an hour and a quarter of like more Boba Fett, right? So that's actually you know, part of Filoni, and like that life experience will be in his, you know, present day character in The Mandalorian. And like Ahsoka is entirely a creation of, you know, she first appeared in the Clone Wars animated series and was essentially the main character for that show. And, you know, her presence in that show and how her relationship with Anakin worked out, because she was Anakin's Padawan in that show, really developed Anakin's character between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith in a way that the movies were not able to do. I know I've said that before, but anyways, she's a real popular character, and they're also going to bring in, I guess, Sabine Wren. I mean, I think that technically that is still a rumor, but it seems like kind of silly if they were not to do that, especially considering that that character traveled with Ahsoka for a time. No spoilers. So it feels like we're starting to rely on some of that canon material that came out of Filoni's years in the franchise. And I think that only bodes well for The Mandalorian, because really the creative people at the helm of Star Wars now is really more like Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. I mean, at least on The Mandalorian, but I mean, my understand, I haven't read a variety in like a few weeks because I've kind of been focused on other things going on in the world. But the last I heard, like, there were a lot of rumors that like Kathleen Kennedy is probably not going to get her contract renewed because, you know, the sequel trilogy did not do well. I know that a lot of people love those movies, and that's fine. I'm just saying that, like, compared to the type of dollars that they wanted to see with that franchise, really did not happen, especially with The Rise of Skywalker. And also, I mean, it's not like it didn't make that much money or anything, but it didn't make the money that they wanted it to make.
Yeah, I think the main problem with that trilogy is they kind of approached it kind of the way they're doing this one, where I guess they've probably done it with all the Star Wars. I know they did it with the first original trilogy, but each episode had a different director. The problem with the sequel trilogy is the fact that none of those directors stuck on the course with the other directors and what they put in. So the three movies kind of fell apart.
This is a bigger conversation than our little episode about this episode of The Mandalorian. A conversation that I would like to have. But let's just suffice it to say for now that the sequel trilogy it's divided the fandom in a way that Disney does not see as profit friendly, if you want to get down to brass tacks. And so, I mean, also, I mean, just beyond the profit motive, which is real, like they don't want to have a fandom that's like tired of things. And half of them is like saying hateful things about the movies all the time, because that's just not good for the franchise in any way.
Right.
And, you know, they have done so well with The Mandalorian that I think they're really looking at Filoni and Favreau as like the new leaders for Star Wars. And God knows what's going to be happening with like live action Star Wars movies in the future. I mean, I know that they're like Taika Waititi is supposed to be doing like a movie or a trilogy. And like they talk like there's other things that are supposed to be happening. But I think that we just have to kind of wait, especially with COVID right now, to see what the fallout is going to be from all of this.
COVID and other things.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, we do also know that there is a Star Wars High Republic show coming to Disney Plus at some point, which is going to take place, you know, like 500 years or something before the events of the prequel trilogy, Phantom Menace, like about 500 years before that. So that's going to be real interesting. I can't wait to see that. But, you know, we have almost no information really about it other than the base, like the time period and a couple other general details. I guess there's going to be like space pirates or something that the Jedi have to deal with. But
on a completely different note, unless you had something else to.
No, please, okay. Please.
You were mentioning, you said 500 years. And I was, as you were speaking, I was like 500 years. So if Baby Yoda is one and a half after 50 years, what would that put him at 500 years? That would be 10 times that. So he'll be 15. Wasn't Yoda like 900 years old?
Yoda was 900 years old. I mean, the whole, you know, like developmental timeline for his species is very unclear.
Yeah.
At this point.
Like I said, I mentioned before, I think before this show runs its course, we might have to deal with a teen Yoda. Or maybe that'll be, you know, another 100 years in the future where all the creature or all the characters in this show are sadly passed away.
I think that for the whole duration of this entire show, Baby Yoda is probably just going to remain a baby, because if he's not a baby, then obviously it becomes a different show. I mean, maybe if he's a little kid that's like just outside of toddlerhood and he's just starting to talk, like maybe that could still work as the same type of show. But once you get into like tween or teen Yoda, totally
stop eating
show.
All the eggs, gosh.
Yeah. Besides which, they would have to jump so far forward in time, you know, for that to happen. Like,
I think they're probably using this show, they're gonna use this show also as a vehicle to slowly throughout its course, unlock the secrets of the race of Yodas, and we'll learn more about who they are, where they're from.
I'd be surprised if we got a lot of information about the Yoda species. I feel like they'll still keep it semi-mysterious in terms of like maybe they will ultimately find their people and their planet, but that'll be like at the end of the show. I don't think it'll turn into like exploring every facet of their culture and like learning everything about them, you know.
But I think there might be like some sort of like they'll learn some little tidbit and be like, oh, that leads us in this direction. Then there finds out something else. Oh, we got to go check over. I've heard a rumor once about, you know, this or that. So go over there and learn a little
bit.
But
I mean, if you think about it, I think that what we're going to see this season, in addition to the kind of general, like, you know, arc that I described a couple of minutes ago, is like, so ultimately they're going to, the first person who's going to be able to tell him anything about the Baby Yoda species is going to be Ahsoka.
Right.
Because she knew Master Yoda personally. Right. And she probably also met Yaddle. So Yaddle's another member of that species who you can actually see on the Jedi Council in The Phantom Menace, I believe it was. But then after that movie, she's not on the council anymore. I think she goes back and like does some other things. But, you know, she actually met other members of this species. Now, that's not to say that she knows where they're from and like all of this stuff, but she would at least have a lead on where they can go to find out more. In fact, it might turn into a thing where in season 3, she's like, all right, well, we have to go to the, you know, the big library on Coruscant to find anything out. And that itself would pose a lot of obstacles for Mando, because, you know, he tends to stay out in the Outer Rim, and Mandalorians, you know, were historically enemies of the Jedi and like all this other stuff. Right. So it could turn like then it's also about navigating, you know, sort of what's going down with the New Republic in its like first, you know, stages in like the first 5 years of its existence. So it might be kind of a tumultuous place. And like, I mean, that would be really, really cool for the third season. It's just that I wonder how, if they're going to be going to Coruscant, that's like the big, that's like a city planet. That would be like if you're watching a Western with John Wayne or something and they're like, they decide to go to New York City. Yeah. Like, it makes me wonder like how they
by LA real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me wonder how they would keep up, you know, the Western genre elements, if that's what they're going to do. But it might also turn out that like, oh, the library was destroyed during the war and we're going to have to go to this like place that's like in the middle of nowhere to find out anything.
Yeah. Or, and that's
I'm just saying, if it's not Coruscant, then Ahsoka is going to be like, okay, well, we have to go to this place to find out more. And maybe she will come with them or maybe she won't. I think it would be cool if she did, or they might just use that like one or two episodes that she'll be in across this and next season to like spin her off into another show. Yeah. There was some talk from Jon Favreau, who's, you know, the showrunner for The Mandalorian, who's, you know, and who directed the first two Iron Man movies and did all this other stuff in the MCU. He did say something in an interview before this season started about how in some of the later episodes of this season, they explore like other things other than like just the Mandalorian in his background. So I'm not sure if that was like a veiled reference to like all the drama that happened with Pedro Pascal, supposedly like walking off set at some point in the middle of production this season, or whether he's just trying to say, you know, hey, we're going to be exploring some things and don't get like all pissed off that it's like a filler episode, you know,
and I heard on the other side of that whole Pedro Pascal walking off was like kind of a non-issue.
I think the reports of it were overblown. Yeah. And I think that it was just something that people could turn into clickbaity like YouTube videos and stuff, honestly. And like if you have an actor who's feeling the pressure from all the stuff going on with COVID and like and he's also like an actor who is forced to cover his face 100% of the time in the show that he's starring in, I could understand how that could result in some frustration, you know, and maybe it was
that's like Chewbacca. You know, he never stormed off the set because I got to wear this stupid mask. No, you know.
Yeah. But I
think it was just overblown malarkey.
I think it was overblown. There probably was a little bit of conflict, but that's like, honestly, dude, that stuff happens all the time. Yeah. Especially the more famous an actor gets, the more leeway they have to be kind of like, you know, erratic or eccentric or whatever you want to call it. Like, whatever, that just happens. Okay. Like, this is the way happen in Hollywood.
The show's named after me. Come on.
But you know, regardless, he's still in the show. He's still the Mandalorian. He's still doing his thing, whatever. So final thoughts about this episode of The Mandalorian. I know we talked about sort of projecting what's going to happen with this season in the future. So any thoughts on that or just final thoughts on this episode?
I think we'll just stick with the episode. We covered the future quite enough. But one thing you mentioned earlier real quick is you mentioned the Western. You know, and I realized when you said that, like this episode, since it all took place basically, you know, in space and on this ice planet, it is one of the few episodes that kind of doesn't have that Western feel to it, which is such a great feel, I think.
I mean, I think that you could make a case that this movie draws more from like a samurai influence than a Western influence, but I still see it. I mean, just because it's an ice planet doesn't mean...
Maybe I'm just you know, spoiled from last episode where you had the standoff at the saloon and you know, all that.
I mean,
stuff.
That was,
but I mean, it doesn't make me like the show any less or the episode any definitely. Less.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned earlier, this was just I thought it was a great episode. The first episode, you know, was used to introduce not only Cobb and that whole storyline with the Krayt Dragon, but also a piece with the, Sand people for Moss. What was it? Moss
Pelgo.
Pelgo. And, you know, that then we get introduced to Boba Fett and his armor. So this one, I think, is just setting up what's going to happen next. And who knows, maybe Frog Lady will stick around for a while.
Well, I mean, I feel confident that she'll be in the next episode, at least in the beginning, because they're going to, it'll start with them like landing on the planet and maybe like, it, you know, chugs out its like final thrust and like slams down or something.
Exactly.
But, you know, they'll get there and he'll talk to her husband and he'll get his lead. And then, you know, it's about like, I wonder if it'll be a situation where, because he's also going to have to fix his ship.
Right.
So he might have to do a job to get money to get it fixed. And then while that's happening, so it'll either be the next episode will either be getting money to fix his ship, unless he just has that money already, or it'll be like him immediately going off and following that lead, which I like. I'm wondering if it's a situation because she said Amy Sedaris' character when she was translating at the beginning of this episode said, yeah, her husband has seen the Mandalorians. So do they have like a hidden like base on Trask? So that people wouldn't think to look for them there because it's like the frog people planet.
Yeah. They're on covert there.
You know? Maybe. Yeah. Like, so I'm just wondering about that. And I'm also looking forward to like getting, I think what we're going to get is some information about how you have different types of Mandalorians who follow different codes or have different, you know, because he's obviously the hardcore, like, you know, creed of Mandalorian where he never takes off his helmet.
Yeah,
but I know for a fact that Bo-Katan and Sabine Wren, if these are the characters that, you know, we're going to get, are not of that same creed because they just take off their helmets whenever they want to.
Right.
So I think that'll be real interesting for the fans to like get a handle on like what that difference is and what that means for the lore of it all, you know?
Yeah.
But so, I mean, I guess I went on kind of a tangent because you just said, I assume Frog Lady is, you know, she's going to be in it. But I mean, I don't see her being a huge part of the next episode, just like
no.
the beginning.
Just an episode or two. She's not as bad as Jar Jar Binks yet, so she can stick around. But no, I thought it was a fun episode. It was, like I said, action-packed. You got your horror aspect. You got the high-speed chase. You have little baby's antics. And, you know, the episode ends. It's like, okay, finally. And we don't even know how Yoda, little baby, got that last egg that you see. But, you know, I can't remember if Mando says something to him. But he just, like, leans back for the trip and the camera shifts over to baby Yoda.
Well, it's like everybody falls asleep and then baby Yoda takes out the egg.
He pulls an egg out from his cloak and goes... And it's like, you little bastard.
It's like, and it's funny because, you know, you think like after everything that happened, the trouble that they got in because he ate the little spider. And then the fact that Frog Lady saves his life with her little blaster.
He has not learned any lessons.
You think, you know, he turns around at the very end and he like looks at her and has that like sort of wondrous little baby Yoda like chimey theme that he has now. And it's like, oh, well, maybe he's, you know, thankful and he's learned his lesson. And then he pulls it out and he's like,
yeah. He wasn't looking at her.
Again, very true to toddler life. Like, that's not the lesson that they're prepared to learn at that age.
That's like a little glimpse into my life. Like I said, my son is turning 12 this year. And I was upstairs using the toilet, as I do. And I noticed the trash can in the bathroom. The lid was half open. And I just glance in.
Where's the story going?
Oh, I just glance in and I see, oh, a Pop-Tart wrapper, you know. So even an 11-year-old, almost 12, is still finding devious ways to consume the sweets. You know, you never know what kids are going to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and you're just at the beginning end of that learning curve.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. My daughter is a little older than 1.5 at this point. But anyway, so yeah, I really loved this episode. I thought it was hilarious. Baby Yoda's hijinks. And like, there was a minute where I was like, God, why does Baby Yoda have to be such a dick?
Yeah.
You know, before my wife reminded me that he's just a toddler. And like, that's just how they are. Like, he doesn't know that that's like
you've already got two little dicks.
Yeah. So
not to be misconstrued.
I enjoyed that. I love the tie-in with the, like the, whatever they're called, the spider creatures. Mm-hmm. That was horrifying. You know, I thought it was a great scene when the frog lady, like, again, you know, gives Mando a swift kick in the ass and basically tells him to cowboy up and, like, you know,
yeah,
keep to his word in a moment when he was probably feeling really demoralized and stuff. I mean, you know, he always moves on, but he was kind of just like kicking back and like taking a break for a minute. And he also said, the deal is off because we're almost dead, when that really is not the way.
Another way to look at it, you know, maybe there was a medical thing because they did just kind of have that bumpy crash landing with the Razor Crest, and then it fell down into the cave and they all got knocked out. And you would think Mando's first thing would be get up and recon the area and see what's going on and try to fix a problem. But what he really wants to do is take a nap. So there's a good chance he had a concussion and Frog Lady literally saved his life by not letting him go to sleep and stay active and alert.
I guess, you know? We'll never know. Yeah, I guess we'll never know. But I give this episode 2 thumbs up. I don't see it as a filler episode at all. I think it's another essential link in the chain on his journey. And I was very entertained by it. So
yeah, because
there we go. I mean,
the base of the show is he's traveling across the universe, across galaxies to, you know, get to where he's going to go. Well, so
a galaxy.
Okay. Well, and we're not done yet. But, you know, it's obvious that every new location is going to be different. So,
yeah,
you know, if they were all the same, that'd be kind of strange. So I think them having a completely different subtle storyline in each place isn't filler at all. It's just
world building. I like it. I like it. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, exactly. There's world building involved, which the show is really good at. And the other thing I really appreciated about this episode was it really put Baby Yoda front and center again.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes he kind of takes a back seat to the action and like some of the stuff that's going on with the Mandalorian. But I do like it when they, you know, they take a moment to really focus on the Baby Yoda a little bit, regardless of whose unborn children he's eating.
One might say
unfertilized eggs.
One might say Baby Yoda is the real villain of the episode.
He's the only one eating.
He's devouring the unborn.
Well, they weren't fertilized yet, so let's not get too crazy, but it still is pretty gross. So anyways, those are my final thoughts. I'm really looking forward to the rest of this season. I think that these first 2 episodes really teed us up for some exciting stuff to happen in the rest of the season. And after the end of the season, you know, let's revisit and see if I was at all accurate in my predictions of what's going to happen. Yeah. So with that, thank you everybody for listening. We really do appreciate it. Please head on over to Apple Podcasts or your choice of podcasting platform and give us a 5-star review and or rating. That really, really does help the show out. And Jess, would you like to give our listeners our social media details?
I sure would. If you use Facebook, look for Mecha Dragon. On Twitter and Instagram, you can look for Mecha Dragon Show. And my children grew up eating eggs their entire lives. And just in the past year or two, they have both decided that eggs disgust them. And they stopped eating eggs. So if you have a similar story to that, you can email us at mechadragonshow@gmail.com. You can tell us if you like eggs or hate eggs and why. Because if you like eggs maybe we all have something in common.
Or you can ask us other things. Yep.
Or other things. But yeah, if you like eggs as much as little Baby Yoda and I do, maybe we'll learn a little more about each other. So yeah, go ahead and do all that. And we're looking forward to see you in the next episode of Mecha Dragon. May the Force be with you.
This is the way. Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod, from Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0, creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.